What's up, everybody? Welcome to a Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am your host, flying solo tonight. Yes, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter, and hopefully you like my falsetto, because that's all I've got. That's it. I can't sing for the life of me, and it kills me. Although I don't wish I could sing. I wish I could play an instrument, but that's a story for a different day. Appreciate you being with me as we lead you up to Area 45 with Patrick Creighton and Sean Bajani later this evening, starting at 7. So we got a lot to do tonight. First off, when I say first off, we're going to discuss what's coming up. What do you need to be on alert for? We'll talk about that as it pertains to the Texans. Then we will have the Texans OG podcast. Now, it's got a little bit of a wrinkle with my guy, Indy Kalu. Not because of Indy. Indy is the host of Texans OG podcast. The wrinkle is it's kind of an OG, but not really because he's not done playing. So if you think about it from that perspective, okay, it's somebody that's still playing who's an OG that can only be one person. That's John Weeks. So John Weeks is going to stop by with Indy Kalu. Some great stuff from those two. Then we will close down the show with a segment that's become one of Mark's favorites, basically. It is the four AFC South voices. They get together in Indianapolis. They all sit at the table. Mike Keith of the Titans, Frank Frangie of the Jags, Matt Taylor of the Colts, and, of course, the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. And they just start chopping it up. They talk about broadcasting. They talk about the games. They talk about the history. They talk about being around for a while, all those kind of things. So I'm looking forward to it. They call it the voices of the AFC South, and it's really, really good stuff. So we'll have that a little bit later in the show. But I figured we'd kick off today. It's the last day before free agency. It kind of is in some respects because the legal tampering period begins on Monday before our show will kick off. So if you've been around for a while and you know kind of how this free agency thing works, you know there's Monday basically to Wednesday of a legal tampering period. Then the new league year starts on Wednesday at, I believe it's 3 o'clock Central Time. At that point, every non-franchise tag free agent becomes free. Even before that, in that legal tampering period, they've got the opportunity to talk to other teams, gauge their value. Now, has it been happening already? Were there conversations at the Combine? Presumably, there might have been conversations with teams in which a general manager was talking to an agent of a particular player in which they could talk. And then maybe at the end, the conversation turned to, well, hey, you know, what do you think of this player? Who knows? But the legal tampering starts on Monday afternoon. And that's really when I know a lot of people have been really, really excited as it pertains to the Texans, because they've got money to spend. They've spent some. Dalton Schultz, 3 years, $36 million contract, as it's been reported. It was also official today, announced by the team, that Dalton Schultz has been signed. Now, I know that's just a formality, seemingly, because once it hits the interwebs, you know it's got to be true. But I've seen situations where things have hit the interwebs, and then it's like, well, wait a second. Hey, where's such and such? I thought he was going to be with his team, and then all of a sudden you find out, oh no, he didn't pass his physical. So those are the kind of things you got to be wary of in some respects. And keep in mind my PSA from last night. Make sure whatever X account you're looking at, whatever Instagram account you're looking at, make sure that's a legit account. Don't fall for the Adnan Schefters with a Z. Don't fall for those, because that was floating around yesterday with the Chris Jones deal of 4 years, $116 million. A lot of people fell for it because that's about what he's going to get. I mean, people are thinking he's getting $30 million. Before it, $116 is $29 million a year. That sounded right. And so a lot of people were retweeting it, reposting it. Oh, look at this. He's coming back to the Chiefs. Chiefs fans getting excited because earlier in the day, he had put down Case. He had tweeted and I think put on Instagram too. He put KC dot, 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 and it's a picture of him being tackled basically by Andy Reid. So is that saying goodbye? It was kind of cryptic. And so when that tweet came out, everybody's bought it. And then you look at it and go, ooh, That's Adam Schefteri with an E at the end. That's, and he's got 255 followers. So, or it could be she. Don't know. But it's a fake account. So be careful of those. So from a Texans perspective, here's what we're looking at. Here are the names. And I know you, if you've been paying attention, you know the names that have kind of been out there. Starting at running back, obviously Devin Singletary. Motor's name has been out there. There's been conversation about bringing him back, or at least there's, I don't know, noise the right word. But there's been consideration of bringing him back, I think, on both sides. I think Devin would love to be able to come back. I hope he comes back. And, you know, running backs, this whole thing with running backs, and there's been a lot of talk about Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry and all these other running backs. We don't know what the market's going to be. We know the last big contract that was signed by a running back was Jonathan Taylor. That was 3 years, $43 million. That was back in September when he was holding out. They got a deal done. 3 years at 43. So there's going to be, okay, will Barkley take that deal? Does Derrick Henry get that? He's 30 years old, 30, 31 maybe. Either way, Josh Jacobs, will he get that? He's younger, but he's not as prolific as either Taylor or Barkley seemingly. So what's going to happen there? Well, Motor falls into that category of running backs, showed what he could do last year. I would love to be able to bring him back. Now, the Texans still have time between now and Monday to get a deal done with Motor because obviously he was a member of the Texans. But that's going to be a name that a lot of people are paying attention to. Blake Cashman is another one that people are paying attention to nationally. Mina Kimes on her show started talking about number 53. Who the hell is number 53? Well, she found out. Blake Cashman, when healthy. And I thought this when he was coming out of school. I thought he was a heck of a football player. Then he ran like a 4.5 at the combine. He got with the Jets. He started right away. And I thought that's going to turn out to be a really good player. And then injuries. Even this past year, we saw some injuries. But when Blake was on the field, AFC Defensive Player of the Week against the New Orleans Saints was great throughout the year. Would love to be able to bring Blake Cashman back. But I got a feeling that, again, because of the success he had last year, the numbers, the analytics are very, very good for Cash. I know, and well, I've heard that there's been mutual interest between the two, as there's been for a while. But obviously, you know, until pen is the paper, we don't know. But Blake Cash, another one we're going to be watching. The biggest ticket item, John Grenard. That's because of the position he plays. He plays the edge. 12.5 sacks last year, set a career record. With sacks last year, had games where he was dominant, games where he was incredible against the run as well. He really grew last year as a player. There's a part of me that still feels for John because aside from the injuries, he's had, what, four head coaches? I mean, started with Bill. I mean, he got here in 2020. Started with Bill O'Brien, went to Romeo Crennel, went to David Culley, and then went to Lovie Smith and went to D'Amico Ryan. So, I don't know. You guys do the math for me on that. That's a lot of coaches, man. That's a lot of coaches. I mean, defensive line coaches, same thing. Defensive coordinators, same thing. I think he's at three or four. Can't say he had any continuity, but I know he had pretty good coaching this year with Jacques and Rod Wright, who took over as defensive line coach, with Matt Burke, came over from Arizona, has defensive line coaching in his background, and obviously D'Amico Ryan. So JG really kind of, you know, played at that high level, and it's a level that, man, he may have played himself into a lot of different contract offers from a lot of different teams. And as much as I love him, there's a part of me that just thinks I'm bracing for him not coming back because I just know how teams are with edge players that are damn good and still pretty young. And so I got a feeling that JG's going to end up getting a lot of contract offers. Now, what that means for the Texans, who's to say? The Texans are the one and only team that have the opportunity to negotiate with him up until Monday at whatever time. Now, have other teams been telling his agent what they think they can give to him? Potentially. But legally, it's supposed to be the Texans up until Monday. So, we'll see what happens with John Grenard. Sheldon Rankins, one-year deal last year, signed with the Texans. And it was kind of a prove-it deal. Like, hey, come to Houston, prove what you can do. You get a defense that's going to, you know, basically show off your skills. Because of the way that D'Amico Ryans wants his defensive line to play, this would be a good spot for you. Rank had that 3-sack game against the Bengals. He played hurt throughout the last probably 3 or 4 weeks of the year. and it was evident, and he gutted it out in games we needed him to. Love to bring Rank back. Would absolutely love it. If that's the money that gets spent on the defensive tackle, awesome. I would love that. Now, I was on the Utopia podcast with Sean Pendergast, and I said, man, I'd love to bring in Christian Wilkins. Bring in Christian Wilkins. Man, sign Rank. I don't care. Get the best defensive tackles you can find in this league and just rotate them all throughout the game and go wreck shop. And maybe that's what happens because, you know, look, how many times did we see Rank and Malik Collins on the injury report? Now, they fought through it and played a number of games, even when they may not should have, but they did. So you need a lot of big bodies that are athletic, can move, and be agile in this defense. Sheldon Rankin's another one that we're going to be watching. Steven Nelson. After 2 years of being in Houston, I said this with my position breakdowns. Go check those out. Did position breakdowns for the secondary, corners, and safeties, and position breakdowns for tight ends at HoustonTexans.com. In fact, I'll tweet it out later this evening and also on Saturday morning. So you can, you know, if you're out supposed to be running errands and you're just kind of sloughing off in the car, drinking a coffee, having a scone, and you just want to read it on your phone, cool. So get those position breakdowns. Steven Nelson, as I said in the secondary breakdown, I felt like he had two of the better years that I've seen a corner have in a while. He was exceptional for those 2 years. Now, a little bit older, 31, I think. Texans don't have a lot of depth at the corner position, so what do? And obviously, we know about what happened last summer with social media and all that. They got it worked out. Nelson walked in and played his guts out. Played hurt. Cincinnati game, he probably shouldn't have been on the field. But he found a way to be on the field that day, gutted it out. I remember talking to him afterwards. I was like, man, I know you shouldn't even play today. I said, I recognize how tough you are. You're a tough dude, the farmer. Steven Nelson, that's another name that we're going to keep an eye on. Now, there are like 20-something others that we're definitely going to have to watch. Cam Johnson, I mentioned a little bit earlier, try to get the specialist complete, get the threesome back together, John Weeks, Kymie Fairbairn, and Cameron Johnson. So we're waiting on that. So those are the Texans' names that we want to, and others, of course. But those are the ones kind of at the, I think, opportunities elsewhere where we need to kind of keep an eye on what teams might be interested in those. Hopefully something happens Saturday, Sunday, maybe even Monday morning where these guys get signed and they get brought back, because that would be freaking awesome. I envision like going to Twitter, X, Twix, whatever you call it, and seeing Texans have re-upped with John Gnard and like how exciting that will be. And it'll happen, I would hope, for at least one of those free agents. Maybe a couple of them. Boy, it'd be nice if it'd be all of them, but then you bring in some others as well. So it's going to be an exciting weekend. And if it's a quiet weekend, guess what? Monday is going to be crazy. Crazy. Not just in Houston, but throughout the league. So looking forward to that. Now, one guy who's already signed and sealed and delivered for 2024 is John Weeks, long snapper extraordinaire. He sat down with Andy Kalu for the Texans OG podcast. That's next on Texans All Access. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. And as promised, it's time for our OG podcast. Texans OGs love this podcast with Andy Kalu. A little twist. It's not a former player. It's a current player. It can only be one.
John Weeks. John, I've met you a few times, and it's always been a pleasure. Appreciate you joining us, brother.
Absolutely, my friend. The pleasure is all mine. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for jumping in. So how many years has it? What year are we on for you?
Coming into year 15.
Wow.
Coming into year 15.
Man, congratulations. I mean, we all know the average career in the NFL is 3.5 years.
Thank you.
15, that's crazy. And from what I saw last year, you have multiple years in you, but I know at this point you take it 1 year at a time. Is there a part of your body now that's aching more so than it was back in 2010, 2011?
Oh, no way, man. I feel fantastic. I am incredibly excited to be coming in for year 15. I am just juiced to be back, and I'm ready to get this thing going again.
That's awesome. I'll say this: after playing, you know, football my entire life, and lucky enough to get 12 years in the NFL, the deep snapper, the long snapper, that's a position that most of the players appreciate and truly understand. But I don't know if the outside world, if the fans really know how important and how tough that job is. Can you just kind of talk about, you know, the mindset of what you have to go through on a weekly basis?
The mindset's something that I've worked a lot. I've worked actually very hard on, you know, for the 15 years, because when I came in, I was what you would call an absolute perfectionist. Right. And you know, in this business, being a perfectionist at the end of the day is just going to drive you crazy. It's going to make the world come crashing down. So that's something that I've really had to work on. I'm still that perfectionist. I'm not as crazy as a perfectionist as I was. But I think that's what it comes down to, right? The job for us especially is all about consistency. It's being there day in and day out for your teammates and being consistent. It's something that I work really hard to make sure that I'm in there every week and, you know, playing with my guys.
You know, you talked about consistency, and that's where I feel your job may be a little bit tougher than guys on defense or offense, because with me as a former defensive end, if I make a mistake, I'm like, okay, I got on the next play. Or if I make a mistake within the play, I can still rebound from it. With what you do, you just can't make a mistake. It's not even an option. So that's where I have a respect for the mindset. Do you read certain books? Do you see a sports psychologist? How do you keep that consistency mentality?
Yeah, I've worked with a sports psychologist for my 15 years in the league. I think that's been very beneficial. You know, I think we all put a lot of pressure on ourselves, right? It's like you said, you know, for our position, it's not one where, I don't want to say you can't make mistakes, because I think if you talk to every snapper, there are going to be snaps that you're not happy with. Mm-hmm. But it's being able to move on to the next one and not carry it over, right? The difference between me and you is that, you know, you have 40 plays in a game, I might get 8 or 9. So my mistake's going to be amplified more than if you have one, right? So I just have to, what I try to do most is I just try to focus on the moment. And as soon as my hand lets go of the ball, I try to understand that, hey, whatever happens, that's the outcome, that plays over. It's time to move on to the next one when I get my opportunity.
I love it. I love it. Me and my buddy, we had like a knockdown, drag out argument over this. And you're the only person who could settle it. And I've played with Mike Bartram, some of the greats. I don't know if you remember that name, deep snapper out of Philadelphia. Played with Dan Turk when I was in Washington. I mean, some of the greats in the position. I don't feel like you can learn how to deep snap or how to long snap. I think obviously you practice, so I'm not taking the hard work away from it. But I've been around some of the best athletes in the world, and we've all tried it, and no one can do it except for the actual deep snapper. So I need you to settle this argument. Can someone learn how to deep snap?
So the argument is going to be settled with, you can absolutely learn how to do it, but the effort that you have to put into it to become one of the greats, like the few guys that you just named, is you have to be incredibly dedicated to the craft to continuously do it. You know, it's something that Mark had joked with us about before we had come run on, but when I was growing up and my coach presented me with an opportunity to become a long snapper, because he told me I can teach you a skill that'll get you to college. I snapped Monday through Sunday. I'd snap 250, 300 balls a day.
Wow.
And that's just the way my coach taught me how to do it. And I can tell you that the first 5 or 6 months, I could barely get the ball off the ground, and just repetition after repetition after repetition, finally tuning little things, making tiny adjustments. One day it all just clicked. And then it's just reps and reps and reps and reps to where I can close my eyes and do it. It's like riding a bike.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, but I would have to say it's a skill that can absolutely be taught. Now, you have some freak athletes that can just bend over and just rip a ball back there. I always say the best backup long snapper is a backup quarterback. I could turn a backup quarterback into a long snapper in like 2 months.
Interesting. Why is that?
It's the mechanics of it, right? Okay. The most difficult thing, the thing that I think is, it takes the longest to get used to, is the release and your grip and where you're comfortable doing it. And then once you can kind of start to time your body up with the mechanics of everything, that kind of speeds up the process, right? For a quarterback, I mean, we really are just upside down quarterbacks. So you'll see a lot of quarterbacks, you know, that they can rip the ball back there. Now, the mechanics are a little off, right? Usually you see one hand leave the ball way faster and they're just ripping it with their dominant hand. But it's just a kind of a mechanical thing. So we always joke about that. But there are some guys that can just pick it up. And it's very impressive to watch them do that, because I've worked my tail off. I know how hard it is. So I can't say I'm not jealous when I watch guys just get down and rip a couple.
You talked about 250, 300 snaps a day. Early on, what's the focus versus now when you're a seasoned vet?
Yeah, so when I was first learning, again, it was all kind of just mechanical and kind of finding what worked best for you, right? I think the funnest thing to do is to, you can relate us as specialist kicker, punter, snapper to almost golfers, right? Every golfer has a unique swing. There's different things that a golfer thinks about, right? There's the Tigers and the Rorys that have the perfect form. Everything's in sync, right? But then you have still the high guys like Scotty Schefflers and all them that have the uniqueness where, you know, Scotty's feet are a little different, but it still works for him, right? There are things that I do that I wouldn't teach other people to do because it's not how you're supposed to do it, but it's what I found worked for me. So it's kind of like finding what works for you, getting in that groove, and then just hitting the repetitions on it.
You've been in this league, obviously, a long time. You first entered in 2008, and I know it's a long time because I was still playing, and I've been out of the league for a while now. Talk about just the difference of, you know, the NFL in its entirety, the players, the culture. Like, how is it different from 2008 to now we're in 2024?
Oh, man. I mean, it's crazy. It's, you know what? I mean, I think, you know, and your son being a college player right now, I think the biggest thing you see is when these young kids come in, they're just built different. Yeah. You know, these young kids are just, you know, JJ had that funny picture yesterday with the 17. He's like, I didn't look like that at 17, right? Like, it's just some of these kids are just it's crazy to see how big some of these kids are at such a young age. And it's awesome to watch how the game's evolved. Yeah, man, it's that to me is just the biggest thing, is just kind of seeing just the athleticness or the athleticism of all these young guys coming in and just how crazy how athletic some of these guys are.
That's a great point, because when I watch the game, I'm not one of those old school guys. Oh, back in my day, we were tougher, bigger, faster, stronger. I'm watching the game like, good God, look at Bosa. Like, where's he working out
crazy.
At? And how can I join that gym? And Myles Garrett and, you know, the list just goes on and on. Like, there's so many guys that we called freaks. You know, I played with Javon Curse. His nickname was the Freak.
Yeah, the Mario, greatest guy in the world.
Yeah, Mario Williams was a freakish athlete. But now it seems like every team has three or four guys that are built like that and can move like that.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, I remember when I first, so obviously, like you said, I came out of college in 08. I got cut by Detroit. I was out for a few years. And I think it was in 2012. So I'd been on the team for 2 years. And we went and played Detroit, I believe, on Thanksgiving. And I just remember seeing Calvin Johnson. And to me, when I watched him huddle up with Detroit, it was like those early Pop Warner days we had, where it's that one kid that's just so much bigger and more athletic than everybody else, right? But now you just look at these teams and they're everywhere. These guys are just so special. It's such a cool thing to watch just how athletically gifted the league has become. And I'm just, you know, I'm still glad to be a part of it.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you play with D'Amico?
I did. So I played with D'Amico in 10 and 11.
Okay.
Before he got traded to Philadelphia, which was a sad day, definitely a sad day in the locker room. And then, you know, we stayed close. We talked all the time. When I saw him, when he came down here and we played against him in Philly, and then I followed him when he got into coaching, and when we would play San Francisco, we would talk a lot during pregame and all that kind of stuff. So I'm thrilled to be playing for him now. Just one of the best men I've ever met in my entire life. And, so happy for him and his family with how successful he's been. And he's just, I mean, I don't have enough good things I can say about him.
All right. So you got the diplomatic stuff out of the way. Now let's be real. So when you, when you see him, do you call him, hey, Meek, what's up? Or do you call him Coach?
You know what I do? I've apologized to him several times because it just comes so naturally. I'll just walk up to him and be like, hey, Cap, I got a question for you. You know, like
nice.
when I got here and I walked into the locker room, they pointed to that man right there and they said, hey, 59 is the captain of this team. You refer to him as captain, and that's how you address him. So for 2 years I played with him, I called him Cap constantly. And, you know, when he was first here, I made that mistake several times and I felt terrible. I'd be like, hey, Cap, Coach, sorry, dang it. You know, like I had to pull him to the side one day and was just like, you know, Coach, I apologize. Like, if I've ever out of line, please tell me. Like, it just naturally, when I see you, I just think Cap. So
And you know, it's funny because I played with him, you know, from six for 2 years. And when I see him to this day here in the building, I always call him Young Meek, and I always have to catch myself because it's like, no, this isn't the rookie that you play with. This is actually the, yeah, the leader exactly. of the football team. But I'm sure he got a kick out of it when you called him Cap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think at his presser, you know, he had a fun time with making me stay up for the current photo with the current players on the team. And then he made me stay up with all his former teammates on the team, too. So, I think he gets – I hope he gets a kick out. I mean, I want to play for the man as long as he'll let me play, so –
That's awesome. That's awesome. Speaking of, as long as he'll let you play, as long as your body holds up. So what does an off season look like for you? How much time do you take off as soon as the season's over? And what are some of your, don't give away your secrets, but just let the people who are listening kind of know what it takes to stay in this league for 15 years.
Yeah. You know, I mean, my vice, my stress relief is to work out. You know, so what I try to do, and I've had awesome vets like you tell me, you know, tell me to try to do it better, but I try as best I can to take as much time off as I can. Right. You know, especially when you go two rounds into the playoffs, the season being a little bit longer, you try to take a little extra time. For me, that's never really been something I've handled well. So I'll take about a week off, and then I won't get right back into football training specifically, but I'll start getting back into my workouts within like a week, week and a half after the season. And then it's just kind of figuring out a routine and something you trust with somebody that you do trust. And I have a great trainer out here that I work with in the off season. His name's Billy. He does a fantastic job with me. He's worked in the NFL, does privates now. So he knows what it takes to be an NFL guy. He trains me for my position specific things, which I think is important for different players, right? Like, you know, Andy, if me and you are working out together, I don't need to be benching, you know, whatever you're throwing up these days, right? Like, you're in the trenches battling with those guys every day. I'm training a little bit different. So I think for me, position specific type of training has been beneficial. And then it's, you know, it's a cliche, but like trying to keep myself as young as possible, you know, and that's kind of what I've been doing, and I enjoy it. I love training. I love pushing myself to the brink of exhaustion when I'm working out. I love setting myself up with new challenges. So I get back into it pretty early. I take a little bit longer off the diet. You know, I let myself enjoy some food, there for a few weeks before I get back locked in on the diet. But, yeah, I don't know if it was something I would tell people to jump into right away, but for me, I'd like to get back into it as soon as possible. Snapping, I'll take about a month off. Okay. I won't snap a ball for about a month.
Okay. I would think, and I'm just guessing from the movements, that a lot, like you mentioned, where I would work more brute strength, I'm assuming you would work more flexibility and quickness.
Yep.
But besides the technique, obviously.
Right. So the way I look at it, right, the strength has to be there because on punt protection in the A gaps, the way the league has gone the last few years, you're seeing a lot more stout defensive ends rushing the A gap, trying to beat the snapper, right? Mm-hmm. Got to snap, set up, and protect. So you're seeing a lot of good A gap rushers, kind of bigger guys, stronger guys. So you got to keep the strength on there. You got to be able to get your guys out in coverage, and then you got to be able to cover. So the way I've talked to my guy is that where I do need that specific flexibility, for me, I'm kind of like a lower half type of snapper. I really get my legs, my hips, and everything involved. So that's important. But I always tell him just to train me as best he can as a linebacker. Cause that's kind of the comparison that I'm at right now. You know, I'm running with backers. I'm trying to protect. So that's kind of the focus for me. Now it's been fun to watch how the positions evolved, right? So when I first got in the league, they had just changed the rule where you couldn't line over the snapper and bull rush him. But when I remember when I got first and got in the league, I don't know, did you have Joe Marr when you were here?
Yes, Marciano, yep.
Yeah, yep. Marciano came up to me. He says, son, if you're not 255 pounds, you're not making this team. So I was like, okay. So I was big when I was young. You know, I was 255 because I had to be stout inside the A-gaps. That's what he wanted. You know, a few years ago, as the positions evolved, as guys have gotten more athletic, like we talked about earlier, you know, I had a few coaches that say, hey, I can't have you that size anymore. I need you running. I need you 235-ish, somewhere in that range. So that's kind of been a fun transition to go from like the bigger spectrum to kind of the more linebacker-ishy type build.
Got it. That's very interesting right there. You know, talking about not just changing the technique, but you have to almost change your – not almost. You have to change your body style, like your body composition. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad you're talking about this so people realize exactly what you have to go through to have the success you've had. We talked about D'Amico when he was a rookie. You know, I just saw the leadership qualities from D'Amico, and I see that, but now I'm on the outside looking in. With another young guy, and I think you know where I'm going with this, C.J. Stroud. I mean, he just appears, and I could be wrong because, again, I don't go in the locker room. I watch it on television, see the interviews. I've had a chance to interview him a couple of times, but he's just another guy similar to D'Amico Ryans where it just feels like he was built to lead a team.
Absolutely. I think the greatest thing about C.J. is 100% genuine. Like, what you see is what you get, and I think that's one thing that guys love about him. I think that's one thing that makes him a tremendous leader. You know, he speaks his mind. He's very open and upfront with the guys, and the guys respect him, and they respect him for being that way. And that's easy to follow a guy like that.
And you just see it. I mean, one thing that really stood out, every time I would ask him a question, John, he would pause, and you could just almost see the wheels. Like, he's not just going to throw out just some random you know, proverbial answer. You could always see that he's always thinking everything through. Then the other guy that I'm excited about, I'm a little bit biased because of the side of the ball, but Will Anderson. I mean, you talk about two great picks. He feels like he's going to be a mainstay on the other side of the ball. Can you just kind of talk about what you see from him as a teammate?
Yeah. I mean, you just two incredibly hardworking young men that came in here and they just put their head down and just grinded away. And I think, as you know, in this business, when you can do that, when you can come in here and lead, but you can also take leadership, that just makes guys fall in love with you even more, right? And we knew from day one what we were getting from both of those guys when they came into that locker room and they interacted with us. So I am so happy for the success that both of them have had. Both of them are going to be tremendous leaders, staples to this organization. And I'm very excited to see what the future holds for both of them, because these aren't guys that are just going to stop. They want to get better every day, every practice, every rep, and that's fun to watch.
You know, from yourself to, you know, other guys that are on this team, when I first heard that they were named captains, my first thought was, oh, man, that's pretty cool. But then, if I'm being real and I'm being honest, I was kind of like, really? Like, hold on. You know, there's some great rookies. There's some great mature rookies. What went into that? I mean, you were there. You were part of the vote. Like, was it just what they did at practice, not just the preseason games? Like, to name a rookie captain, I've never heard anything like that in my entire career.
Right. And again, I think it comes down to how they both carry themselves, not only on and off the field, right? But they're true professionals, true leaders. And being a captain, you know, and you know this too, it doesn't matter. Age never matters, mm-hmm. right? It's about being able to talk to the guys, being able to get out of the guys what you need to get out of them, being able to deliver the message that the guys need to hear. And everyone respected both of them enough, how they came in, how they worked, how they practiced, and both of them earned that C. And I was proud to vote for both of them. And you know, I'm excited that they're my teammates. I'm excited to watch them grow this next upcoming season, and I'm excited for the organization.
I earned a lot of C's also, but it wasn't captain. It was more my classes in the university, and I'll take it. Well, we always said at Rice, C's get you degrees. So
yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's changed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We said it at Baylor, too. Don't worry about it.
Y'all said it at Baylor, good. All right, I'll tell you what has changed, and I need your input on this one, John. The damn fashion, the fashion. I am not understanding.
Oh, yeah. We're both not there.
Talk to me. You see it. Talk to me. What's going on?
Evolved. Absolutely. Everyone's got their own personalities, and their fashion matches their personalities. And it's been fun to watch, but, and I'm like you, man. I mean, give me a pair of jeans, a t-shirt. And you know, if I want to get fancy, a little bomber jacket or something, and that's about as fancy as I'm going to get, you know? So, it's fun to watch how some of these guys come in, though. I mean, some stuff that I don't think I could ever pull off. but the fashion has definitely evolved, and it's been fun to watch.
That might be the biggest change that I've noticed outside of some of the rules and some of, you know, we talked about how some of these guys are bigger, stronger, faster, but some of the things these guys are wearing, I never expected to see a defensive end walking around with a purse. Like, I'm sorry. And it being okay. So,
yeah, the fit, I mean, the fits now, it's, I mean, I don't know fashion, man. I mean, gosh, it's, whew, I got nothing. I got a couple fancy suits from a really good friend of mine. His name's Tom. He makes me some awesome suits. But other than that, my guy, I'm about as basic and as blue collar as it gets. It's a pair of jeans, a polo, and a jacket. That's about it.
You know, it's funny. You know, early in the season, it might have been this season or previous season, they're making fun of Kirk Cousins' attire. And I'm watching it saying, I like what he's wearing. Like, what's wrong with what Kirk Cousins has on? And I know awesome. It was like some joke that it was too plain, but the fur and the purse and the skirts. And it's not even like I'm saying, hey, you shouldn't dress like a woman. I just don't understand.
So I guess, I mean, my question for you then would be like, if you were playing, do you think you would jump on to the new fashion trends, or do you think you'd stay?
That's such a great question. I've actually thought about that, but I just can't. See, I don't like attention, so I don't think I would do anything that would cause too much attention. Right. And I'm just comfortable in jeans and a t-shirt. So
now I will say this, and this might, you know, this might crush a few people here, mm-hmm. but they don't dress like that. You know, the guys on the team don't dress like that constantly.
Got you.
You know, that's not an everyday thing. That's something that's game day only attire type stuff. You know.
Thank God for that. Thank God for that, because yeah,
that's you know, they know that they might be getting a little bit of they might get a photograph or two before the walking up on the tunnel, so they got to make sure the fit's right.
All right, well, it's not right, but I appreciate you saying that they're only doing it once a week. All right, let's talk about the recap of this season. And again, I keep talking about outside looking in because that's where I'm at, but such a special year. I know it didn't end the way y'all wanted it to. And I've always said at the end of every NFL season, there's only one happy team. And obviously that's the team that wins the Super Bowl. But have you had a chance to reflect and realize how special this season was for the former players, for the fans, and for everybody watching and rooting y'all on?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't think you don't take what we did this year for granted, you know, and I think that was the big message in the locker room too, is to try to understand that, like, hey, these seasons don't happen all the time. When you're in striking distance, you got to do your best to take advantage. You know, unfortunately, we weren't able to be that really happy team at the end. But to look back on the season and say it wasn't successful, you know, wouldn't be fair to the guys that put in all the work, that went out there every day and played. And I think you really tell from the fans, you know, just the amount of people that come up and just like, man, that season was awesome. You know, and as players, and you know this, as players, you just kind of just like, man, I needed, you know. Yeah, it was great, but we didn't get to the end. But to just see the energy back in Houston, and I've said it for a long time now, when the fan base has energy here in Houston, I don't think there's a better fan base to play in front of. And they were excited, and we were excited, and you know, we understood that we felt a little bit short, but I'm excited for what's ahead, and what a great season it was to be a part of. Now it's happy to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah, that man is definitely a part of it. John Weeks in. Kymie Fairbairn in. Just waiting on Cam Johnston. And hopefully they'll get Cam back. He's one of the best punters in the league. So you got two of the three specialists in. Appreciate John Weeks for stopping by the Texas OG podcast with my man, N.D. Kalu. Now, when we went to the Combine, Mark looks forward to this every year. Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, Frank Frangie, the voice of the Jaguars, Matt Taylor, the voice of the Colts, and Mark sit down as the voices of the AFC South. This is really good stuff. We're going to finish up on a Friday with some great stuff from those four next right here on Texans All Access. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to the final segment of our Friday edition of Texans All Access. Last one before free agency tampering period. Legal tampering period begins. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. Fresh back from Indy, and the combine last week, and as much as we love getting an opportunity to interview all the people that we do, I know that Mark Vandermeer's favorite thing is when he sits down with the three other voices of the AFC South. Mike Keith of the Titans, Frank Frangie of the Jaguars, and Matt Taylor of the Colts. Here's a snippet of their conversation. Mike Keith, kick it off, my friend.
This is so much fun to be joined by my fellow play-by-play announcers from the AFC South, Frank Frangie, Jacksonville Jaguars.
How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for doing this.
I love doing this. I look forward to it.
Matt Taylor.
How are we doing?
Indianapolis Colts. And the champ. He's here. The champ is here.
That's got the belt.
Mark Vandermeer, Houston Texans. Congratulations on being the AFC South champion.
Thank you, Mike. And thanks for doing this. This is a wonderful thing that we all do. And who would have thunk it, huh, that I'd be sitting here with the title in hand.
Yeah.
Frank. I wrestled it away from you.
Yes, you did.
Personally.
We didn't have a good last month. We handed it over the last month.
We have so much to do with the wins and losses, don't we?
Yeah. But that doesn't mean we can't claim them. Yeah. Mark,
I can tell you this. I sounded much better this year. I don't know what it was. People were complimenting me. Great job. Listened. I'm like, you know, last year we got blown out in some game, and I thought I did a pretty good broadcast, but it doesn't matter. I get it. This is what it's about, and it's wonderful.
Winning and losing is so underrated towards the perception of your performance.
No, of course.
It's crazy how that factors in for people.
We've all had good games or good wins where we feel like, I can't speak for you guys, but I would imagine this be the case, where you feel like, I could have done a better job that day. You know, I could have done certain calls, could have nailed those better. And then you have blowouts where I thought, man, or not blowouts, but just losses, where I thought, that was a really good broadcast. I mean, we hit on all the points. Yeah. The calls were clean. Everything was good. But you want your team to win. That's why we are voices of the team, because we want to ride those highs and preferably not the lows, but it makes the highs that much more appealing.
And Mike's point is right. If we're winning, they love us.
Yeah.
Okay. And if we're losing, it's the worst broadcast they ever heard. I mean, there's a lot to that.
Well,
I mean,
we do the thing where they put a GoPro in our booth.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And do like a call of the game dealio, which is kind of, I don't know what I think of it, but they do it. It's sponsored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So, it's sponsored. Yeah. And for the people listening, that's a big deal to what we do. Right. Anytime you say something is sponsored, you have Mark Vandermeer's reaction, which is good.
Yes.
Right. Well, but that means that
job
means,
security.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
means you got to have one every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So you win.
Right.
And it's like there's a touchdown pass and it's exciting and whatever. And, you know, you see the comments. Oh, it's so fun and we really enjoy it. You lose.
Yeah.
Why are you posting this?
Yes.
Why are you celebrating mediocrity?
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, that's the whole thing.
I think ours only goes out, that part only goes out kind of like when we win.
Oh, nice. So, yeah. Okay.
Good for you.
But the beauty of the GoPros is fantastic, because it's not like these booths have a GoPro spot.
Right.
So
right.
some go here. Right. For a while they go here.
Oh, I know.
And it was perfect, because then it had a great shot of my bald spot. Okay. So maybe we can move it down just a hair.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. We have a ball with that as well.
So you were going to say, Matthew?
Well, I was just going to agree that when you win, I mean, you guys experience this too. When you win, Monday is so much easier. Talking to the coach, getting coffee, the water cooler in the break room. I mean, that's the joy of it, is you come back on Monday and everything's a little bit smoother. People are more inclined to give you more. So the Monday show, the coach's show, is a better show following a win as well.
Oh, no question.
I think one thing, though, that we go through being around on Mondays is that win or lose, they jump into next week so fast because they have to.
Right. It's like a two-hour window.
Yeah, you think about what they're going through as coaches especially. Players may be a little bit different, but as coaches, they got to move, win or lose. They got to move into next week. It's over. Just shove it aside, move into next week. But they do like talking about the wins more. And, you know, we all know how to ask the questions. And I think these are important questions. You know, what did you do well that you can carry forward? What do you need to improve upon? There are ways to handle it, because I know you guys get peppered with this. Are there things you can't say?
Right.
Are there things you can't talk about?
Are your questions handed to you? Are they scripted for you?
No one has ever said anything to me about anything. But, you know, and I think we're all similar in this way. My whole career, I've been the voice of a team, you know, and I've always known how to handle those things.
Right.
And when you're doing basketball, I mean, I did a 3-23 basketball team once upon a time. You know, you learn how to ask the creative questions in that environment. When your team is losing, I say this to everybody too, in our digital, social, every department that does team-related content, When you lose, you will get better at your craft.
Oh, yeah.
That will improve you even more than winning.
And my situation, Mark's a little different. You guys work for the teams. I don't work for the team, so I come in for the game.
Yeah, but you kind of do. Yeah, well, more
do.
Than you
know. Well, yeah, well, I do, but I don't. But to your point,
mm-hmm.
I think people understand that when I'm on every afternoon, I work for the team.
Yeah, right.
So I'm not going to ask the hard-hitting, how in the world could you have blitzed in that situation?
Sure. Well,
that's not my job.
But who and does that? So, who yeah. does? My rebuttal is yeah. this. Who does ask those questions?
Right.
I'm thinking, hey, Mr. Talk Radio guy, go to the press conference.
Yeah. Right.
You've got access right. to these people, to the head coach. You could ask them yourself the tough question. But you don't. Most of these guys don't have the guts to show up at the presser yeah. and ask those yeah. questions that they're throwing out to their audience rhetorically yeah. on the air
they'll
to get calls.
They'll play the fluff sound bite from the day before and then rip it for 3 hours
and rip
on
it.
Monday.
Go to the press conference.
Right. But there are certain questions you always have to ask. I don't know if you guys, do you do a post-game interview immediately after with the coach?
No, I don't. Next day.
No.
I yeah, do.
It's next yeah. day.
Yeah. So I would, you know, and I'm going to ask if there's something involving the quarterback,
mm-hmm.
if he throws 4 touchdown passes,
yeah. right.
if he throws 4 interceptions, if he gets hurt, there's going to be a quarterback question.
Yeah, you have to do that.
You know why? Because the fans are interested in the quarterback.
That's right.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
And so Mike Vrabel, he would get so mad at me because he would say, you know, I would say, is Will Levis okay or is Ryan Tannehill – is he going to, you know, do we have a report on him yet after
right.
injury? And he no, I get the same thing every time. And he finally, you know, sort of said to me at one point, he goes, why, you know, I'm not going to answer that. Why do you ask? And I explained it to him. It's kind of the job.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's not the hard hitting, crazy, whatever. It's just, you know, these
right.
are things that the fan base is going to want to know. And so if we have to go through the dance of me asking and you not answering, fine.
Right.
That's okay. Yet if that's what you want to do. But just understand to do my job. And he totally got that.
You got
to
ask the question.
Right. And
you got to lob it in there.
He totally understood. He's like, okay, I get it. You yeah. know, I get why you feel like you have to do that from the fans' perspective because that's who you do it for.
And I think most of us, I'm pretty sure this case with you three guys right now, and I know it is with me, we have good coaches. Mm-hmm. Our guy to work with, Doug Peterson's fantastic. And I get the sense you and I have talked about D'Amico.
Yeah.
And I know you're getting to know Shane Steichen. Mm-hmm. And so you're getting a new coach with Brian. But we're lucky there. It's not the old school guy as much. We've all had that guy probably. But it's not the old school guy as much that you go, okay, I'm going to ask this question. And he's going to jump it in here. Well, I don't think we, in today's day and age, certainly in our division, I don't think we have that. I think
no.
we have pretty good coaches.
Still sort of surreal to hear Frank Frangie on the airwaves here in Houston. Good friend of mine. I've known him for 30 years. And appreciate him, Mike Keith, Matt Taylor, and, of course, Mark Vandermeer for stopping by. It's going to be a wild weekend. Hopefully the Texans sign a few of their own and get ready to sign some other people's own on Monday when the tampering period begins. We'll see you then, everybody. And as always, go Texans.